Hey, there you are.
Yeah.
I hope you lose all the recording. Yeah. What were we just talking about? I'm so sorry, Bryce. Oh, yes. Yeah. One of the silly things though, like my resolution didn't pass last year, but lo and behold, a couple of months ago, Community of Christ decides to put the Doctrine and Covenants in its entirety online for free for the first time. And they explicitly mention my resolution and say, even though it didn't pass, we're still gonna do what it said. Yeah, which is fun. But going back to what happened in 2010, so there's all of these pieces of legislation dealing with queer topics, and it's very, very clear the church needs to have a conversation about this. And what ends up happening is several months beforehand, Steve Veazey ends up putting out an inspired document, which is what we call a revelation before it's been canonized, an inspired document. And that inevitably becomes Doctrine and Covenants 164. Essentially, what that does is it says, queer people are okay, but we have to decide on a nation-by-nation basis if we are going to be inclusive of queer people. So that's in 2010. Nation-by-nation basis, in what we call national conferences. So we have congregational conferences, mission center conferences, and then world conference, but now it kind of adds a new level for national conferences. So we can decide policy on a nation by nation basis for the first time. It's a compromise. The church didn't want to come out and be queer affirming as a whole, because it would alienate the conservatives and it would alienate people in queer phobic nations. So the instructions of how to do one of these national conferences, it takes 2 years for those instructions to be released. 2 years, yeah. And Community of Christ ends up having the first national conferences 3 years after that. So we are now 5 years after Doctrine and Covenants 164 for us to have a vote in certain nations. Yes, it is. And so the United States, Canada, Australia, most of Europe all have their national conferences in 2015 or 16, and they all vote yes. We will be queer affirming. And what they ended up doing is they created the policy. Nobody knows who wrote the policy, but it's created. By the verbiage, it's very clear that a queer person did not write it. Which is, yeah, I saw you wincing, Shannon, of like, it's not great having non-queer people write queer policy. Yep. We still don't know who wrote those policies. And so what ends up happening after that is in 2012, it was specified that there would be an interim period. So the rights of queer people are considered interim. And then there would be a finalization process about 2 years later. Well, that 2 years came and went three times over. And there were still no official queer rights in Community of Christ. It was all interim. And so finally, the advocacy group Harmony, the queer advocacy group, pushed to actually have this finalized, saying like, hey, we're a priority in this community. We deserve to have our rights officially recognized, and we deserve to be prioritized a little bit. And so the president of Harmony, kind of the Affirmation, if you're familiar with Affirmation, and Harmony are very similar organizations. And so with Harmony, they put forward this petition, and it gains like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of signatures, basically asking the First Presidency, do your job and finalize these these policies. The First Presidency did not take very kindly to that, even though for the better part of a decade, Harmony had been, you know, saying, asking the Council of 12, who finalizes this? The Council of 12 says the First Presidency does, and the First Presidency says the Council does. And so I've kind of phrased it as a go ask mom, go ask dad situation. And so finally, Yep. Yeah. And so finally, this petition really pushes the powers that be to really hammer out the final process, and Community of Christ, queer people in Community of Christ only gained their first official rights in the church, I think it was in 2021. So Community of Christ is more queer affirming and inclusive, but it's not all rainbows and sunshine. People like to say, but look, we have a gay 70. There are a lot of caveats to that that are being ignored. For example, we still don't know if we can have a queer apostle. Because an apostle oversees multiple nations, which may not be queer affirming. And so it is a giant question mark that has gone ignored, despite pleadings by the queer community to have these answered. No, I think Doctrine and Covenants 164 was really trying to have their cake and eat it too. They wanted to be progressive in progressive nations, and they wanted to be conservative or even regressive in those countries. So many of the revelations in Community of Christ are often phrased very conservatively, but they do push the needle forward towards progressive. That happens in bigger jumps than it does in others sometimes. DNC 156, which permitted women to be ordained, was definitely one of the bigger leaps forward. DNC 164 was a leap forward. They have made it difficult for the church moving forward, because theoretically, somebody in Texas can have the priesthood, and they cross the border into Mexico, and they no longer have the priesthood, because Mexico hasn't had those national conferences. And so the whole church kind of becomes this patchwork of inclusion to different levels. And it's complicated and difficult. And I don't think Doctrine and Covenants 164 was fully thought out with all of these implications. And at the end of the day, they didn't prioritize giving queer people official rights in the church. Like I've said, there, you know, back in the day with Prop 8, people had marriages and they were like dissolved. I personally don't feel safe changing my gender marker from male to female, because I'm worried Obergefell versus Hodges will be overturned and my marriage to my wife could be dissolved. That's a very real thing. And so the church not making good on following through with those official policies did speak volumes in the queer community. Yes. Yes. Well, the first women were ordained in 85. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Seem like it. Yes. So one thing I do want to mention, I already believe that we already have had a queer apostle. I think C. George Mesley, way back in the day, is a good candidate for probably a bisexual member of the Council of Twelve, but he was forced out of the council because he was queer. Potentially queer. The first openly queer, which I think is at the heart of what you were talking about. Queer people have always been a part of this community. We've been forced into the closet. I don't know what that looks like. I think the church has more work to do. I feel like in a lot of regards, queer people are accepted in the church if they look like non-queer people. So for example, there is this secret policy in Community of Christ called the cohabitation policy. This isn't actually written down anywhere. But essentially, if you are living with a partner and you are not married to them, you cannot be ordained to the priesthood, period. Now, queer people in the United States have had access to marriage for less than 10 years. And we are talking generations of systemic marginalization. We've developed cultures around being denied these things. And now the church is essentially telling us to forget all of that. And so there were instances of people who were living with their partner and weren't ready to get married yet because they had only had the ability to get married for like 18 months that were told, you either have to marry your partner, you have to find separate living situations, or you can't be in priesthood. And that is something that Community of Christ has been trying to have a conversation about the last 10 years, but it's shot down every time at World Conference. Yeah. And there is, this kind of brings us to something that is very, very personal to me. As I mentioned, I'm polyamorous. I'm married to my wife, and I have my other partner, who's non-binary, and the three of us are also in a relationship. And we're very, very happy. We love each other a whole lot. And like we've been together since like 2018. It was last year that we finally decided to call a rose and say that we were all in a relationship together. But yeah, it's lovely. And I came into Community of Christ with the understanding that I could be my fully authentic self and I would not be treated differently or marginalized in any way. Well, in, I think it was 2022, there was a woman who was outed as being polyamorous, and she was a very, very well-respected member of her congregation. She was on the pastorate team, basically the bishopric, and people loved and knew her, and people knew about both of her partners. It was kind of an open secret. a don't ask, don't tell thing, and she was outed. I won't go into too incredibly much depth. There's a lot of hurt feelings in regards to that situation, but suffice it to say, Community of Christ spiritually abused this woman after she was outed. And as she was grieving the loss of her husband, the church decided to take action against her to remove her priesthood. Because she is polyamorous, yeah. And that there are, I would say, maybe a couple of dozen of us who are non-monogamous in Community of Christ. We're a very small minority. but that was noticed. It was noticed by the polyamorous community. It was also noticed by the monogamous community that she was in, and her congregation rallied around her, and they basically fought back. And it was very, very admirable. The people of that congregation, salt of the earth, they're the best people in this church. The Salt Lake congregation, fantastic people. But what ended up happening was the congregation had a rescue. If you guys are familiar with like the Boise rescue and the Swedish rescue, there was a Salt Lake rescue in Community of Christ to talk about this. And the congregation just wasn't having it. They were like, this was how you treated this woman was wrong. And you need to tell the powers that be that this was wrong. Well, the message was brought back, and I personally even wrote a letter to the First Presidency, saying, please talk to the polyamorous community, learn about how our families look, how they work, before you make any sort of policy. And so, I heard nothing. And on January 28th, 2023, exactly 1 year ago today, at the time of this recording, the First Presidency secretly released a policy marginalizing, formally discriminating against polyamorous people, saying that they cannot be in priesthood, period. So they essentially formally codified me as a second-class citizen.
Okay, so there's now that we've gone through the motion of the position.
Yes. Yes. That's a big question, and I don't think even the church knows for sure. For example, I wanted to know, what has the membership of Community of Christ looked like over the since 1860, since Joseph Smith III took over? The church doesn't know. The church didn't know until I and a couple of my friends dove into, you know, old articles and conference reports to gather all of that information. And I was able to plot it into a chart. We can see Community of Christ has only ever had 250,000 members. If we take a look at the last 45 years, that growth, the membership is just practically a flat line. And then when you take a look at the last 20 years of membership, it's a flat line. Community of Christ is not gaining members. Additionally, these are all self-reported numbers, and they do not reflect that 30 to 50% of people who left and never came back between 84 and 90. So right off the bat, we're looking off the top, 30 to 50% less of that 250,000 number. Then, yes. And what's interesting too is how representation at World Conference operates is based off of how much membership you have within that area. So there is actually a bit of an incentive to have bad bookkeeping. And so, you know, this is something that is like being talked about because it's becoming increasingly obvious. Congregations are closing and it's like, oh, we have 200 members on file, but like 10 people show up ever. And like 30 of those people have passed away in the last 15 years. But they're all being counted as representation for World Conference. And then when we also take into account of like religion in general in the Western world is kind of dying, you can take off another 30% of membership. By my estimates, I think that there are probably no more than 80,000 active members of Community of Christ. Now, what we want to talk about is what's the age range of these 80,000 people? Yeah. So the best information that I have been able to find, since 2016, Community of Christ has been surveying what the ages are of the delegates, the representatives to World Conference. And last year, in 2023, only about 1.4% of the church, the representatives were under the age of 21. The age range 21 to 40 was 5.3%. 41 to 50 Yes. 41 to 50 year olds make up about 7.7%. 51 to 60 year olds make up 13.8%. 61 to 70 year olds make up 34.5%. Yes. At least the representatives that are going to World Conference. Yes. Yes. And like internally, people are using phrases like the church is dying and population collapse. And like nobody has had like these statistics, let alone talked about them in public. People kind of have a vague idea, but I don't think they fully understand the gravity of what this is going to look like in the next 15 years. Yep. Yeah. Little harrowing. Yes. Yes. And what's interesting is the church is increasingly starting to acknowledge this. A couple of months ago, the presiding bishopric, which in Community of Christ, they're the ones that hold the pocketbook. They're in charge of the finances. They released a chart that showed what the income from mission tithes was from 2010 to 2022. And then they projected what they anticipated this to be. You know, the mission tithes, the worldwide mission tithes to be out till 2030. The most that Community of Christ has ever gotten was in 2016 when it brought in $16 million from tithes. By 2030, they are anticipating only getting $8.5 million from tithes. So in the course of about 15 years, they are anticipating halving the income that they're getting. Yes. Yes. So Community of Christ, the last 10 to 15 years, I want to say, has very much prioritized that pension fund. We call it, I think it's Bridges of Hope is what we call it. And we have very intentionally wanted to make right by these people that were leading the church. Make sure we don't kick them to the curb in their old age kind of deal, which is admirable. I think that's good. It's good to take care of people. And Community of Christ has had to make sacrifices for that. We've sold campgrounds. We sold the printer's manuscript of the Book of Mormon. And a lot of that went to this Bridges of Hope program. Looking forward, people are anticipating quite a few layoffs in the first couple of years of Stacey Cram's tenure, just because, the church's income is halving. Between 2016 and 2030. The church can't sustain even its slim employee base as it is now. And so there are going to have to be layoffs. You look at your outcome and you look at your income, there's a discrepancy. and so... Yes. So I was actually one of the first people that accurately predicted that it was going to be Stacey Cram. Back on Steve Pinacker's show, I think in 2022, I saw the writing on the wall. I knew how long a president is in. I looked at Steve Veazey's age and I was like, he's going to be retiring soon and it's probably going to be Stacey Cram. There were a couple of reasons why I thought it was going to be Stacey Cram. She served as an apostle from 2005 to 2016, so 11 years as an apostle. She then served in the presiding bishopric, including as the presiding bishop, from 2016 to 2023, just last year. And then additionally, she was concurrently in the first presidency from, I think, 2016 until 2025, if I'm getting my dates correct here. And so that alone, she has experience with the first presidency and the presiding bishopric, that that's a lot of experience. Yes. Yes. Additionally, Stacy herself, she has a PhD in organizational management. She is, in my opinion, the clear person to be the next president of the church. I had some of my own wishes and everything like that, but I think she was the obvious choice, considering her experience, her expertise, her education. She is going to be the most well-educated president Community of Christ has ever had, because she has multiple degrees even. And so, it's Stacy. yeah, but she has a lot ahead of her. You can't ignore the... Yeah. Agreed. Yes, I'm glad I'm not in her shoes. she, like, if anybody can do it, I think it's Stacy. Like, she has the expertise, she has the knowledge, she very clearly has the drive. And we can't discount the fact that she is the first woman president. There have been a couple of very small sects, like the Postites, who are breakoffs from the Rigdonites, who had women presidents. But this is the first, like, big Restoration Church that's had a woman at the helm. And that's inspiring. People have been looking forward to this moment for literally generations now. And that's exciting. That's really exciting. And like, but all of these other factors make it difficult and the future less certain as well. Stacy has, from what I have been told, has been a champion of kind of selling off church property in favor of kind of restructuring to be more sustainable in the long term, which makes sense. But like, Community of Christ, since Joseph Smith III's era, has had this tradition called reunion, where we all get together and camp for a full week. And Community of Christ has a lot of campgrounds, and these campgrounds are practically considered holy sites, like on par with temples in a lot of cases. And so we're selling those campgrounds, and it's cutting into that identity and that heritage now, and it's getting down to the bone already. And she's inheriting that, and she wants to be able to hand this church off to a next generation. But there's probably going to be some really, really difficult sacrifices that she needs to make in order to do that. On top of that, one thing that needs to be mentioned is Stacy will be 63 if she is ordained. The World Conference can say, we actually don't want Stacy. Which is cool. That could happen. It's never happened, but it could. Yeah. Yeah, I will be back if that happens. But if she is ordained, she will be 63 years old. The oldest president at the age of ordination in Community of Christ history was Israel A. Smith, and he was 70. So this makes Stacy the second oldest president of the church ever. The average age is about 55 at ordination. And so she's already very nearly 10 years over that. Yes. Yes. So I actually accounted for that already. Joseph Smith III was 27 when he became the president. So he alone does skew the data quite a bit. So if we look at all of the presidents, the average age of ordination is 50. If we ignore Joseph Smith III and Fred M., then it becomes 55. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So if we look at the age of retirement or death of a president in Community of Christ, it's somewhere in the realm of 70 to 72. And so Stacy is already pretty close to that. And so that has led some people to speculate even already, and it's only been a couple of weeks, if that, since it was announced that she was picked. It's led people to speculate that she is going to have a relatively short tenure. Some people are speculating maybe only two World Conference cycles, and a cycle is 3 years. We only have conference once every 3 years. So, yes. Yes, but if we look at the precedent, like Wallace B. Smith became the president at 48. W. Grant McMurray was also 48. And Stephen Veazey was also 48. And now she's going to be 63. And when we look at the tenure of the last three presidents, it's Wallace B. Smith, 18 years, W. Grant McMurray, 9 years, and Stephen Veazey, 20 years. So a lot of people think that she's going to set another record of shortest tenure, maybe? A lot of people think she's going to come in, swoop in, make a whole bunch of changes, and then retire and hand it off to the next guy. So a lot of people, it might be my hair, sorry. A lot of people think that Stacy is going to swoop in, make a whole bunch of changes, and then retire in about 6 years, two world conference cycles, and then let the next person take it over. All of this is speculation, but like when we're looking at precedent, we only have precedent to look at to predict the future. So, as I mentioned, that discriminatory policy towards polyamorous families and people such as me and my family was put out January 28th, 2023. The church has never publicly acknowledged this policy. It is on the church's policy repository website. So you have to go looking for this policy. And I didn't find out about it until mid-February. And I was kind of the canary in the coal mine, and a lot of people know about this. And so this policy has kind of come to be called the February policy, because we found out about it in February. It has been difficult for a lot of people, because I'm very serious when I say I feel like a second class citizen in my church. And that was really hard. I had to take 3 or 4 months last year away from my church, and I didn't know if I was going to come back. To really kind of gather my thoughts, gather my feelings, kind of articulate my beliefs. I wrote a whole book called Maxims of the Mother about it. And ultimately, I decided to come back to Community of Christ and be a bit of an advocate. And so last year, I organized a Sunstone panel with myself and two of my friends. One of them, L. Mills Warner, who's fantastic and will probably listen to this, so hi, L. Who's also polyamorous, openly polyamorous, who was devastated by this policy, and she resigned from Community of Christ. And so her and I got together and just talked about our experiences being polyamorous in Community of Christ. However, leading up to this, I announced that we were doing this panel, and there were apostles that put pressure on Sunstone to cancel this panel, to not let Elle and I tell our story. I'm not going to name names, but but it was difficult, and there were, oh no, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. Yes. Yes. I'm not going to name names. Additionally, it became known to our little panel that World Church was sending someone to be a presence at Sunstone last year. And we kind of took that as an intimidation move. And one of the people that was originally going to be on this panel ended up dropping out as a result. And it kind of worked. But Elle and I wouldn't be silenced. Our families mean too much to us to not advocate for them. And so Elle and I went on. Additionally, I and my two partners ended up writing a book about what polyamorous families look like, addressing a lot of myths and rumors and misconceptions about polyamorous families. We addressed how polyamorous people could be included theologically in Community of Christ. And then we even touched on the legal precedents that exist in the United States and Canada regarding polyamorous families. A lot of people don't know this, but there are multiple cities in the United States where you can have more than one legal domestic partnership. And so that begs the question, how would that work in Community of Christ? And these questions are here, and it's normalized in my generation. Like, if you hop on, like, Bumble, they ask, are you non-monogamous? And they put that in your profile. Like, it is a fact of life. And the church is just ignoring us. Despite all of my advocacy, I have not heard from the First Presidency, and I have gotten lukewarm responses from even allies regarding any sort of inclusion moving forward. My friends and family have been very supportive of me. My wife is agnostic. My one roommate is a witch. And my other roommate is a Norse pagan. So we're a pretty diverse household here. But a couple of weeks ago, they very gently were like, what are you getting out of this? With all of your advocacy, what do you have to show for it? Like, are they listening? And I kind of had to admit, like, I don't know if they're listening. I don't know if they care. And so a week ago yesterday, ended up writing a letter to the First Presidency, and I gave it to my apostle and my pastor and a couple other folks. And I basically said, I have been pushing for a year to at least have a conversation about polyamorous people in Community of Christ. And I've heard nothing. I can't keep living like this. And so, if I don't get a commitment that you're willing to talk about this with the polyamorous community, and I'm not saying start solemnizing polyamorous marriages tomorrow, or even overturn your discriminatory policy, I'm asking if you're willing to have a conversation. And I'm not putting any time frame on it. Let's have a conversation after Stacy gets ordained. But I would like some sort of an indication that you're listening and you're willing to talk. And I said in that letter, and if I don't get that indication by February 6th, I am going to resign my membership in Community of Christ. And I will be compelled to move on. And the reason why I chose February 6th, that is the day that I resigned from the LDS Church in 2015, and it is the day I was confirmed into Community of Christ in 2021. It's a big deal to me. It's a big day. And so at the time of this recording, it has been 8 days, and they have, I think, 9 days more. I got an email saying that the First Presidency has received my letter, and a month or so ago, or a couple weeks ago, I ended up sending them those resources that I've created so that they can, I've made these, I've printed them out, read them, please listen to me, hear me, I want to be a part of this community and I want to be a part of this movement. And I'm only 29 right now. People my age are in short supply, and this is something that's very, very, very important to me, my family. And if you're not willing to talk, what's the point? I don't want to stay somewhere where I'm being systemically discriminated against, and you're not even willing to come to the table to hear about what my family looks like. Life is too short to stay in places like that. There are other places, even spiritually speaking, that I could go or even create that would be more inclusive and accepting and understanding of who I am for exactly who I am. And if Community of Christ isn't willing to be that place, I hope they get there someday, and I think they will, but I can't be a part of it. Of course. February 6th. It will probably be in the evening, on the 6th, that I resign. I'll give him the full day. But I have been running an advocacy group, a progressive advocacy group in Community of Christ called Heart of Discernment. And I'll let folks know on that page what ends up happening. My friend Elle resigned last year already. I have one friend who's polyamorous who has kind of been in the closet and hasn't known if they're safe in Community of Christ to come out of the closet. And they've seen everything that Elle and I have gone through and read everything that we've made. And they're not a member yet, but they've been a big part of the congregation that they're in for a while. And they're thinking about just kind of leaving. And like I said, I think right now there are about 80,000 active members of Community of Christ. So even losing three passionate people is a big deal. Mm-hmm. The last year, I've had to think a lot about Community of Christ. Community of Christ has what we refer to as the enduring principles, which are things that we value very, very much. And a couple of those things are worth of all persons, all are called, unity and diversity. Those are morals that brought me to Community of Christ. I was like, this is a restoration church that is progressive, that has good morals, and I want to be a part of it. And I want to give my time and talents to this because I believe in those morals. Over the last year and a half, I've really come to find out that those are very aspirational. The lived reality is different. Community of Christ is not as queer affirming as many, especially ex-Mormons, believe. There are a lot of nuances, as we talked about today, and even more, that people don't hear about. I think Community of Christ is at an impasse right now, especially with the transition of the new president. And Stacy taking over, a woman president, it's at an impasse. And what happens, I think, within the next 5, 10 years will determine if Community of Christ is here 40 years from now. The Strangites were once the second largest branch of the Restoration, and we can only count the Strangites in terms of solitary congregations at this point. The same could happen to Community of Christ. If something does not change to meet the spiritual and moral needs of Generation X, the Millennials, and Generation Z, if that doesn't happen, Community of Christ will not be here. And I pray to God that it will change. I really hope the first presidency even just says, yes, let's talk in the summer of 2025. That's all I need. That's all I want. I love the Restoration. I cannot untie myself from the Restoration. It is a part of who I am. I have left one Restoration church before because of how it treated me. I can do it again. I know I'm strong. I know I'm resilient. I don't need any one organization. That being said, I want Community of Christ to live up to its aspirations that attracted me to it to begin with. I want that to be a real church. We'll see in the next week if Community of Christ can be that church for me. And yep. It's a rough place to be. It's not something that we want to talk about or to experience, but it's a part of life, what is happening here, and we can't ignore it. Yes. So the advocacy group that I help run is Heart of Discernment. You can find it on Facebook. We also have heartofdiscernment.com. That's where a lot of my advocacy work in Community of Christ has been. I do a lot of historical work, as well as just kind of general thoughts on my personal website, which is gilleriodekel.com. I'll very kindly ask you to put that maybe in the description, Bryce, because nobody's going to be able to spell that. Yep. but all of the books that I've written are on those two websites. And I make everything available 100% for free. I'm very much of the opinion that when it comes to spirituality, there should never be a dollar sign in front of God. And so everything I make is 100% for free. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for having me. It's been lovely talking about this. I know my roommates will appreciate me talking to you guys about all this Mormon shit for the afternoon instead of them. Yep. Yep. Absolutely.